Hello and welcome back to Instant Mom. I thought I would talk in this episode about a really touchy subject for me personally, because my feelings on this topic have changed completely from when I was sort of first introduced to this topic. And it's something that I've benefited from, and I also feel really bad about it. And that is the topic of mediation. So for those of you who don't know about mediation, I'll give a little bit of background here. And as always, when I talk about my experiences, I'm of course talking from my personal experiences, and every experience of a foster parent, every case in foster care is very different. So I'm just going to put that out there. And also what I am familiar with is just how Indiana works, and all states and sometimes even different counties within the same state can operate differently. So just want to put those two disclaimers out there. But in Indiana, when a case is moved to adoption, so usually around the 14-month mark after a child has been in care for 14 months, there are some other triggers that can make the case sort of be moved to adoption. But after a judge rules that the case plan is now adoption rather than reunification, that doesn't necessarily mean that the child will be adopted. It doesn't mean that the foster parents will be able to adopt the child. It just means that the goal of the case is now moving to adoption rather than unification, and permanency through adoption is the primary focus. How that proceeds is that you then have to terminate parental rights. And it is, it's supposed to be a trial, a court case. So DCS and the state have to essentially prove that the parent is unfit. And then the parent, if they choose, gets the chance to prove that they are a fit parent, or that they deserve more chances or longer time, and make the argument to keep their parental rights. And it can be a very long, drawn out process. And just like in a typical court case, witnesses are called and people make the case for both sides. And it can be really traumatic and time consuming. And so in Indiana, before termination of parental rights moves to a trial, parties have to try mediation, meaning that the foster parent and the biological parent and their respective attorneys have to try to mediate this before it would go to a trial. And I'm assuming that the point of this is to save court costs, frankly. It's expensive to pay for all those attorneys. It clogs up the court system. And so I think just like when you try to mediate before a divorce, not that I've been through that, so I don't necessarily know that experience myself, but it's hopefully to save some costs, save some expense, and save some time to come up with a solution without having to drag it to a trial. And this is what happened in Jack's case. His case plan was moved to adoption, and a trial date was set for a termination of parental rights, where we would have to go through that lengthy court battle and presenting witnesses and all of that kind of thing. But of course, since we're in Indiana, the judge also set a mediation date for us. So we had to try mediation. And what happens when you get a mediation date, in most cases, is that when you're the foster parent, you lawyer up. You don't have to, but I think that's what most foster parents do, particularly if they would be interested in adopting their foster child. So we retained an attorney. And I should note that at least in Indiana and in most other states, the state pays for these attorneys for you, or at least it's a little bit complicated, but the state sets a reimbursement rate for which they will pay the attorneys, and the attorneys that handle these cases generally set their rates right at that reimbursement rate or slightly higher by $100 or $200 or so. So if it's not free, it's a couple hundred dollars out of pocket. So it's very inexpensive for the foster parents to do this. So most foster parents do this because there's not a downside. And what happened in our case and what happened in other cases is that we met with, well, I say we, but I met with the attorney who would represent us, and she kind of coached me through essentially a deal that we presented Jack's biological parents. And the entire strategy is that you try to make a very enticing offer to the biological parents so that they will give up their parental rights to their child in order to take the deal. Kind of works the same as a plea bargain would in a criminal case. You try to sweeten the pot and make it worth their while to, essentially plea out to say, okay, I'll give up my parental rights in exchange for what you are offering me. Now, of course, you certainly can't offer money or material things, but what you can offer is access to the child. So the attorney encourages you to include things in your offer like guaranteed contact. And that can be anything from we promise that we would send you pictures and a letter once a year, all the way to we will agree to monthly supervised visitations, right? It can be anything that you want it to be, basically. But obviously, the more you sweeten the pot, the more likely it is that the parent will agree and voluntarily give up their parental rights, and the foster parents quote unquote win and can proceed with the adoption of the child in foster care. I just want to pause there for a moment and say that's the first time I think I have explained that bluntly, and I feel like really sick about it. And actually I'm like kind of choking up a little bit because it's a really icky thing. And it felt icky at the time. And I don't want to give away too much about Jack's particular situation. And I don't want to give away too much about what was happening with Jack's biological parents at the time, because they have a right to privacy, as does Jack. And his parents are in a very different place now than they were back then. And for the record, I really love his parents. His mom and I have a really close relationship, I think. We're friends. She is family. She is a great parent now to her other children. She's sober and stable, and there are so many things I admire about her. So all that to say, things were very different at the time of our mediation, and I did have immense compassion for her. And I remember in our mediation, like being very teary because I knew how much I loved Jack. And I was only imagining how much she loved Jack and how painful this was for her. But I was also torn because I did not think they were fit parents at the time, and I wanted him to be mine. So anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. So the attorney, kind of advised me to be as aggressive as possible in terms of offering the most generous deal to his parents in order for them to agree to terminate their parental rights. And I remember sitting in the conference room with my attorney, and she said, I would suggest, because I was like, well, I don't even know where to start. What does generous mean? Is generous that we offer letters twice a year? Is generous that we do supervised visits once a year? Like, what is generous? And she said, well, I think you should offer supervised visitation monthly. And I was like, you are insane if you think I'm going to do that. Because at the time, his parents were not in a good place. They were not making their visits that they had set up already. And I was just really annoyed with them and angry at them, and just didn't want to give them monthly visitations, especially since they weren't making their visitations anyway. And I remember her saying, like, look, here's the thing. She said, a lot of parents will think that they want monthly visitation, and a lot of bio parents will think they want monthly visitation, and this will be enough to get them to agree to terminate their rights. But in reality, once they, you know, realize that their child has officially been adopted by you, if they're going to keep using or if they're going to keep struggling, they're never going to follow through with monthly visitation anyway. Like, they'll get bored with it, they'll get annoyed with it, and pretty soon they'll drop out of your lives. So she was essentially like, even though you're offering monthly visitation, there's really not a chance in hell that it would turn up to be monthly visitation because they just won't show up or they won't want to do it. And at the time I was like, okay, yeah, I can understand that strategy. Like, we're going to make it seem like it's really generous, and it is really generous, but we're also banking on the fact that they'll continue to be unstable and they won't actually like take all the visitation that we've agreed to. And then they also help you, and you build this offer into like a legal contract. And so they also build in lots of protections in this legal contract, because my worry was also like, oh my God, like, let's say she does want visitations every single month. until he's 18. Like, what if we move across the country? Do I have to fly back once a month for her to see him? I was, you know, worried about protecting ourselves from inconvenience, frankly. And so you build in lots of protections into these contracts that are pretty standard. Things like the parents have to be sober for the visits, and that the visits have to take place within X number of miles from your home, so that you don't get into a situation where, you know, if we decide to move across country, we're not required to come to her, but she could come to us if she wanted to. Other things like, you know, they can't bring other random people to the visitations unless I approved it ahead of time. Stuff like that protects you. There was another thing that the attorney put in there that said, you know, if the visitations ever became harmful to Jack, if I felt like they were traumatic, if as Jack got older, he just didn't want to go, that, you know, we didn't have to keep doing it if any of those things happen. Because I should also mention, because this is a legally binding contract, if the parents agree to it, it is legally enforceable. So you can't just bait and switch and say, yeah, I'll give you monthly visitation, and then you get them to agree to it and terminate their parental rights, and then you refuse to let them see their children. Bio parents can take the adoptive parents to court to enforce those agreements if the adoptive parents decided not to follow through with the agreements. Of course, I don't know that a lot of bio parents do that, because that takes money and resources to hire an attorney and to enforce those documents, and usually they are not the party with the resources. So the whole thing just felt icky at the time. Even when I was really mad at his parents, even when I felt like they were not fit parents, it still felt icky to me. It felt like I was trying to get the best deal on a used car or something, rather than talking about these life-changing decisions of terminating parental rights. But I moved forward with it, of course. Because also in Indiana, you are mandated to try mediation. It's not not really an option. And so we put together a very generous agreement, and we had our first mediation date. It happens in like a conference room of a private child welfare agency, not the DCS offices, because the mediator is supposed to be a nice neutral party. And I remember the first mediation date we had. His parents did not show up. And I remember being so annoyed. Like, we all were waiting in this conference room, and I remember we waited there for about an hour just to make sure they weren't running late or something. And I remember going around the room in my mind and counting how much money this was costing. Not necessarily me, because the state pays for a lot of these attorney fees, but just in general, how much money was this costing? Because you had the mediator who was getting paid, you had my attorney, you had their attorney who was there, then DCS was there, the caseworker, and then the DCS attorney was there. I think there was also their therapist. There was a therapist that had been doing visits with the bio parents that was there. So it was just like, this hour of us waiting is costing thousands of dollars. But anyway, they never showed up. And so at that point, we had the option of trying mediation again, or just saying like, okay, we tried mediation and they didn't show up, so now I guess we'll have to go to trial. And my attorney advised me to try mediation again. Basically, there was no harm in trying mediation again. I just had to show up at a different date, and we already had the agreement, and we hope that they show up again. And so for the second date, I had absolutely no optimism at all. I'm like, they didn't show up the first time. They're not going to show up this time. I just did not expect anything to happen. And I remember they did show up. And when they showed up, I just remember, like, I didn't know where to look. I didn't know how to act, because we are, you know, sort of legally opposing parties in this mediation. And I had almost all of the power in this situation. I had the resources, I had the money, I had their child. and they sort of were powerless. And it just felt like just immensely icky to be doing what we were doing. And it was really, really heartbreaking. Because I knew that what I was hoping for, my best outcome that day, was their just like absolute worst outcome. And it's not often that you experience that in life, where the thing that you are dreaming and hoping for is someone else's complete nightmare. I mean, I don't know how, where else in life you run up against that, you know? And I had a lot of compassion and empathy for Jack's mom and dad in that moment, because even though I was angry at them and frustrated with them, I couldn't even imagine the pain that they were feeling. And it just made me really sad. And I also just felt icky about the whole thing, like I said. And so they got there and the mediator sort of explained kind of everything I explained to you, what mediation is and what would happen next. And their attorney took them into a small conference room and was, you know, kind of showed them the offer that we were making and walked them through the offer. And my attorney and DCS caseworkers and the DCS attorney and I and the mediator, we just kind of stayed in the conference room waiting to see what would happen. Like, would they come back and ask for additional things, make a counteroffer essentially? Would they just say like, nope, no dice, we're fighting for this and we'll take it to court and see what the judge says? Like, what would they do? And I remember the other conference room door opened and their attorney, there must have been another door out of the conference room, because I don't remember seeing his bio parents after they went into the conference room to meet with their attorney. I don't remember seeing them again that day. So I don't know if I was just in a daze and didn't see them. I don't know if they exited the conference room through a different door ahead of me, so I didn't see them. But I just saw their attorney come out of the conference room, and she put the papers, the sort of offer, down in front of me. And she said, congratulations, it's a boy. And she kind of said it just like that. Congratulations, it's a boy. And I truly didn't have any emotion in that very minute, because I wasn't processing it. I was like, what does that mean? I don't, what? And I remember looking at my attorney, and they were like, they signed, and they were really excited. And I was not expecting them to sign at all. I mean, they didn't show up the last time. There was no indication that they would agree to this. And I was just like, what? They signed? That's it? And I couldn't believe that that was it, that it was over, that Jack would now be mine forever. I was just like, I could not fathom it. And I kept being like, wait, what? They signed? Like, that's it? This is done? They signed? They don't have parental rights anymore? Like, what? And it was just so mind-blowing to me. And I remember obviously just being so happy that it was over. I was so happy that we would be able to be a quote-unquote normal family without caseworker visits all the time and sort of all of the logistical hurdles that come with being a foster parent. I was so happy to be done with the system. And I also remember being like just gutted for his parents. So there was like this real, like, I don't know. It was almost like I was a little bit numb that day, because my emotions were sort of canceling themselves out. I was, on one end, I was just so incredibly thrilled. And on the other end, I felt so, so bad. And so they kind of canceled each other out to where I was just kind of, I just was. But then I think the next thing that happened, I was not, in retrospect, I am not proud of this. And this is one of the things that I took down off my Instagram, because the more I've learned about foster parenting, the more I have gotten to know the birth parents, the bio parents' perspective, the more nuanced my own views have been, and the more I've been able to realize like how wrong a lot of my previous opinions and beliefs were. But anyway, after this, some friends got a cake, and they had me over for a celebration, and the cake was like a baby shower cake that said, "It's a boy," and had this like little party. And on one hand, I want to give myself a little bit of compassion for doing that, because I was never, even in that moment, I was never celebrating the fact that he was in foster care, or that his parents lost their rights, or that they were facing these really huge hurdles and they just couldn't get it together to be there for their kid. I was never celebrating that. Like, never once was I like, "Nana, nana, boo, boo, I got your kid." Like, it was not ever that, no matter how mad at them I was. But I also think I could have, at the very least, not posted the photo of the "It's a boy" cake publicly. Like, that was in really poor taste, and that was not at all sensitive to his parents, who could have very well seen that post that day and just felt like that was twisting a dagger in their back. So it's really hard to look back at that time, because, you know, of course it is okay that I was happy that Jack would have stability and that I could be his mother forever. Like, of course you're going to be happy about that. You want the foster parents to be happy that they're adopting this child. You don't want them to be like, "Yeah, okay, I mean, I guess," right? But I just did not handle it with the compassion and the grace and the balance that I should have, and that I would now if I knew then what I know now. So there are some posts that were sort of from that time that I took down off my Instagram, because in retrospect, I'm like, yeah, like, that was not okay. And that's something that I always try to think about now when I look back at old posts, or when I post things now. I think about, if I am the bio mom and I am looking at this and I'm at the lowest point of my life, right? Maybe I'm battling a terrible addiction. Maybe I am battling awful mental illness. Maybe it's domestic violence. Maybe it's all kinds of trauma and poverty. And maybe it's all of those things piled on top of each other. Like, I have hit the rock bottom of the rock bottom of the rock bottom. So rock bottom that I don't even have my own child anymore. And if I stumble upon that post where I see that beaming foster parent with that "It's a boy" cake celebrating the worst thing that has ever happened to me as a bio parent, how would I feel? And so I always try now to center my judgment around that point of view, which I was not doing back then. So I really, really deeply regret the way that I handled it back then. But I think the broader picture, aside from my own sort of personal behavior and reaction to that, is that I still feel like mediation is just kind of an icky practice. I understand the reasoning behind it. We need to make some efficiencies in court costs and free up the court time and all of that. And maybe there is philosophically a reason behind it too. I don't really know. That's never been explained to me, sort of the origins of this forced mediation. But it just feels so icky to essentially bribe and twist the arm of a bio parent into giving up the rights to their own child, to giving up all hope. And that is, I think, just kind of a deeply disturbing practice. I think it's one thing if it works its way through the court system and each side has been able to present their argument and a judge has been able to theoretically be unbiased and evaluate both sides and make a determination. But to essentially give all of the power to the foster parent and allow them to, you know, hold the bio parent hostage until they give up their rights is just so tough. I mean, because the implication, I should also say this, the implication when you're making this offer, although it's never actually stated this way, because I don't think, certainly wouldn't be ethical, but I don't think it would be legal either, although I could be wrong about that, is to say, basically say, "Hey, accept our deal, give up your parental rights in exchange for whatever contact we've decided to give you, or take it to court, and if you lose and your rights get terminated, you will never hear from your child again, right? That's the implication. And I think parents, no matter how disturbed they are, no matter what they've done, I do believe that most parents deeply love and care for their children. And so a lot of parents at mediation give in and will terminate their parental rights voluntarily because they're scared, because they don't want to go to court and lose, which most parents do, and risk never getting photos or letters about their child again. And, you know, sure, when their kid turns 18, they can try to reach out to them on their own, but that's a long time to go without having any kind of contact or access to your child. And so it just feels very manipulative. And it's just a very icky practice. And I thought about this today. This was on my mind because I saw an acquaintance post. They're going through mediation right now. And I really want to have compassion for all sides because I was there. I can't really criticize the behavior of this foster parent because I did the same thing, which was like asking everybody to pray that the parents would give in and sign the contract and terminate their parental rights in exchange for our very generous offer. But when you're able to step back, it's just such an icky thing. So I would be interested to hear from people who might know, an ethical or legal philosophy or basis for mediation that maybe I'm missing here. Maybe there's a perspective that I'm missing. But I think mediation is just like deeply disturbing and deeply wrong. And I also want to say, as I say in any of these, I am fully aware to all of the Karens who occasionally like to send me messages. I am fully aware that there are, of course, the rare, abhorrent cases of biological parents just doing horrific things to their children to where, yeah, I probably am not going to feel any sympathy for you in mediation. And I'm not going to feel sorry for you, right? Obviously, if there's sexual abuse and physical abuse and extreme neglect, it is very hard, if not just outright impossible, to feel even an ounce of a fraction of sympathy for those parents. Obviously, like nobody's arguing that somebody who almost beat a child to death should get a bunch of sympathy when they voluntarily terminate their parental rights. Duh. But what a lot of people also don't like to realize, or maybe they just don't know, or they don't want to admit, is that that is not the majority of cases. The majority of cases, at least here in Indiana, but this is, I think, the case from around the U.S., they're linked to addiction issues. And addiction is an illness. It is not a moral character failing. So they're linked to addiction, or they are linked to poverty, or they are linked to their parents being foster children themselves and not having any stability. So it's not so much this is an evil, terrible, awful parent who is just sadistic, as it is something that could have been remedied if there was more support or intervention very early on. And it's usually a case where the parent does very deeply care about their child, but they just have so many obstacles to overcome that they were just not able to do it. They were just not able to do it. And I think in Jack's case, and his case is not unusual, his parents didn't even necessarily get a chance to try. I mean, his case moved pretty quickly. So he was placed with me when he was 3 months old, actually just 4 months old. And his case plan was moved to adoption when he was a year and a half old. So, you know, really his parents got a slightly over a year to try to show a court that they could be stable parents. And that's not a lot of time, right? If you're facing deep mental illness, if you're facing really tough addiction, if you're facing poverty, and I talked about this in my last episode, like, could you turn your life around in a year if you were at the bottom of the bottom of the bottom? Like, that's really tough to do, right? So you know, I think there are a lot of parents like that who just, they aren't given enough time, they aren't given enough support, where it is a little bit, there are some shades of gray rather than just, oh gosh, this parent is just sadistic and terrible and they absolutely need to lose their rights. And everybody can agree on that, right? Those cases are much more rare. So it's a really tough thing to talk about because I obviously benefited from the philosophy and practice of mediation. And I did a lot of things wrong, you know, like those posts that I talked about. And so because of that, I try not to point fingers too much when I see other foster parents sort of celebrating mediation or, you know, gloating about the competitive offer that they're presenting the parents who probably can't say no to it because I was there. But I also think when you know better, you do better. And I just really want to challenge people to think about that larger picture and to think about the power dynamic in mediation and the manipulation that comes with it. It's really not even manipulation because it's sort of right there in the open, right? Agree to this or you might never see your child again, or at least for the next 18 years. So that's what I wanted to reflect on today, is the seemingly ethical but probably not so much practice of mediation here in Indiana. So as always, thank you so much for listening. If you have questions or comments or ideas of topics you'd like me to cover, shoot me an email, elizabeth.friedland@gmail.com. You can also always message me on Instagram @efriedland. And thanks again.